Welcome to Polycast, the official podcast of Apolton Civilization site. I'm Daniel Quick, known as Dan Q on Apolton's forums, and with me is Mackie.
Hello.
Imran.
No, he's not.
He's still asleep.
Well, that's nothing new. And Blake.
Hi.
I understand you got up ridiculously early for this.
No kidding. And I need to sleep, so I'm like a drooling zombie. It's 5 a.m. here.
Who really wants to be asleep?
Mm-hmm. And what's that? There's a resounding sound of who cares?
You're a tyrant.
And Blake is now gone.
Dictator. I prefer dictator. Thank you very much.
I think one time we just must have a long, you know, just as a joke episode. Just whenever, anytime I speak, just have a...
Oh, it's just much easier to cut you out altogether.
Oh, that's true.
There's a certain someone out there who would like me to apologize for Polycast, but yes, Jaguar, I will repeat what I said in the forums. You're right. I'm sorry I didn't think to start this sooner. My bad. So how are you enjoying this so far, Blake?
Well, it's...
Uh-oh.
It's kind of a lot like so listening to it, except also with talking.
Well.
Yeah, you get to talk back at Dan. Yeah.
I think about the same number of people listen to it anyway.
And Blake is now thinking, what have I gotten myself into?
I wasn't paying attention.
That's the best way to do it.
Even better.
Half the time Dan talks, and I'm like, Dan talking. Drift off.
Yeah, it translates in our head as rrr, 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 rrr.
No, it translates it's in our head as shiny, shiny, shiny. On news today, yeah, we discussed the Galactic Civilizations 2 Dreadlords being released a week early for all of you nerds who don't have a date on Valentine's Day. We discussed Alpha Centauri Civ 3 and the algorithmic culture. Mr. Galloway discussing games. And also the Civ 4 Mac patch adding multiplayer compatibility with PCs, which doesn't really matter because no one really uses a Mac.
Send all the email to Imran. In the modcast, we talked about our favorite religion Civic and Civ 4. And if there's way too much desert, especially when it's near me.
And then over in the Senate, we look at state religion, or no. Most people say yes, some people say no. And, you know, iron, horses, or ivory, maybe copper.
In research today, we discussed bridge building for some reason.
In the time machine, Sid Meier killed dinosaurs in 2001, in late January, and we discussed that. And how we still have no idea how a first-person dinosaurs game would have worked.
And don't forget, Dan also shared with us our first Polycast phone call, which, of course, was the wrong number.
Of course. Yeah.
But I made it a right...
That sums it up. I made it a right number. Oh, Galactic Civilizations, my favorite.
Your favorite what is the question?
Brad Wardell. I'm his biggest fan.
So yes, Galactic Civilizations 2 Dark Avatar goes gold. Did you notice that Brad promised all those significant others out there that their spouse would not be able to play this much anticipated expansion until February 14th? You know, it was bad enough being Valentine's Day, but... You know, he gave them lots of heads up so that they would give them time to distract them, you know what I mean, for most of the day. Then, without warning, Brad, Starduck, and company blindside these significant others by releasing the title less than a week before Valentine's Day.
Or they figured that their clientele does not have significant others.
It's cold. That's true.
Exactly.
I'm getting so much hate mail from Asher. No.
Yes, Dark Avatar will be your date on Valentine's Day.
Yay.
And then you load up the game and it goes, you don't know where to click.
Oh. It's good that they released it. I'm sure all of the fans of the game are ecstatic.
I noticed how you said all of the fans, not we the fans.
Oh, well. Damn it.
You're Brad,
don't listen to them.
I noticed one comment in the thread on the official Gelsif2 forum asked, was this planned all along, or did you sit down in a meeting and say, what the heck?
I'm voting they sat down in a meeting and said, what the heck?
I would hope they said, what the something else,
well,
but...
I'm sure it was a lot stronger than what the heck, but...
A $10 mail-in rebate if you purchase the gold box set, which, of course, includes Dreadlords and Dark Avatar together. And the only way you can get a boxed version of Dark Avatar is to get it as part of the gold set. It's not available at retail Dark Avatar just itself. The argument being that it's very costly and difficult to get decent shelf space for the title. So they went about it this way. And so if you mail in that $10 rebate, then before shipping and handling, the gold is only $39.99 US. So if you did not buy Dreadlords, shame on you. And not through a Polton, double shame on you.
Don't look
now
at
you
me.
Have the now you have an opportunity to do so.
Through a Polton.
And it is also worth noting that the gold edition has the 1.5 patch for Gelsif2 applied to it already. So you don't need to get it and then start patching before you start playing.
That's always good.
Kudos. Kudos. You know, if you're going to re-release a title as part of a repackaging effort of whatever description, please follow Stardock's example by doing the courtesy of updating the original work with the latest patches. This has been a public service announcement.
Especially if you go back to buy older games in a series, then you go, where'd the patches go?
There is another advantage to get the boxed only or the download plus the boxed option. Perhaps that's the best of both worlds, because while you're waiting for the boxed option, you can download the game, and then when it arrives, you also get a printed manual, a hotkey chart, and physical discs.
Ooh. Apparently, GameSpy rated it a 5 out of 5.
Mm.
Wow, IGN actually rated it a 9.0. Probably one of their highest ratings so far of the year. It is February, but shh.
I was going to say that.
So I guess now we move on to Alpha Centauri Civilization 3 and Algorithmic Culture.
Ooh.
Were you swooning, Imran?
Yes. It sounded really cool. Okay, Dan, talk about this while I read the article.
I'm too busy reading it too.
Wow, yes, well, I'm actually the only one that read it.
Yes, it's a review of this collection of five essays from New York University assistant professor named Andrew R. Galloway, who takes the point of view of the gamer rather than the developer of the game. It's making it easier to relate what he is trying to express rather than simply understand it, try to make it a little less academic. I think we can all relate to the introduction about, you play games, aren't you a little old for that?
No.
Yes.
You are for that. I know people who are in their 60s and are, well, we have people on our own forums who are in their 60s and still playing Civ. There's no such thing as too old for playing it.
That's right. Now it should be, aren't you playing this yet? I mean, come on. You were just out of diapers yesterday. What's wrong with you?
Mm.
Hey, kid, why can't you play Unreal Tournament good yet?
And in the fourth of these papers, Allegories of Control, Galloway shoots down the idea, or perhaps the label given to the idea, says Pop Matters multimedia editor Mike Schiller, who reviewed this work, shoots down the idea of history simulators such as Civilization by pointing out the inherent fallacy, ooh, that history could be simulated via any combination of finite game code. Well,
jeez.
Yes, it can be. It can be. The argument then would be, how well does it do so? Because if you're saying it can't be simulated, then Civilization wouldn't exist now, would it? Come on, Andrew. And earlier papers in the set focus on events that happen within the game's world versus events that happen outside of it, and the source of the events, whether it be human or machine. And he also talks about the origin of the first-person shooter, but who really cares? Yeah.
What do you say about outside the game? What's that place? Yeah. Something about outside the game. Is that like reality? What's that?
What?
Reality? What is this reality?
I hear that in reality, there are some people who haven't even played Civ.
Reality
for
definitely.
Shame.
Well, what am I talking about? There are some people on our forum who haven't played Civ.
It's
like, how did you get here?
Plot Matters multimedia editor Mike Schiller finds the most interesting essay to be the last, and I read this and I thought, are you kidding me, Andrew? Are you looking for a fight? He explores the effect of various game hacks on the part of the players themselves, finding the current incarnation of counter-gaming. Counter-gaming? Anyway, rather useless in the context of the medium it tries to revolutionize, because most of the hacks available separate the play from the game, turning the game into another medium altogether. Isn't that a good thing?
And kind of a point of them?
Greater than the sum of its parts? He also says these hacks are unplayable and in many cases uninterpretable, making them interesting only by the fact that they exist. Look, Andrew, just because you can't interpret it doesn't mean it can't be interpreted, okay?
By hacks in quotation, he's including mods and things, then I don't know. What does he mean uninterpretable?
Oh, and this can make our modcast more interesting, too.
No, because mods put the life in the games. People are still playing. Morrowind came out in, what, 2002, 2003? People are still playing that game because of mods for it. The mods they have, I see where he's talking about it completely separating the game and turning it into something different altogether, but what it is giving more ordinary people the chance to create, do something creative where normally only the developers used to get to do such stuff. There are people that are famous in forums because of the things they've created.
Mm.
Hey, like Blake.
Yes.
Now that I think of
Blake.
That, I was about to say present company excluded, but...
present company included. Woo, good segue.
Well, I find it interesting that these hacks are unplayable, and in fact many games are unplayable without the hacks, such as The Sims 2, for example, which is a bug-ridden mess without hacks to fix it.
Now, to be fair, perhaps it's just Schiller that is not explaining Galloway properly.
That could be.
So you know what this means? Andrew, you need to send us a copy of your collection of essays for free, and we'll try not to bash you too much next time, okay?
Because he listens to us all the time.
Schiller does give Galloway a nice concluding comment while he says that he overuses his examples too much, that it becomes an annoyance. Only through writing such as this can the concept of gaming as a healthy adult hobby ever be taken seriously. Well, it's an adult hobby. We don't know about the healthy part, but we hear you.
Yeah, the healthy's on, yeah, the jury's out on the healthy part.
For Mac patch adds PC multiplayer compatibility. My first reaction was, who cares? And then I thought, now just a second.
Who uses a Mac anyway?
Not gamers, I mean, you know.
All Civ 4 Mac players, please send your hate mail to Dan and Imran.
Oh, come on. What, we'll get two hate mail?
No. We'll just get one because we're the same person.
No. They might decide to send it to both the DLs. So I guess you can play against people who are on the Mac if you have the PC. I did not realize it was a problem before.
Look this way. If you play multiplayer, now you can stomp all over Mac players, too.
Ew, those pansies.
Oh!
Throw down, yeah!
Oh, now he's really getting hate.
Oh, wow. I used to be the anti-Mac evangelist, and now, Imran, you have passed the master.
While I'm posting this on my Mac. No.
So when's the first Mac versus PC players tournament?
I don't know. It's going to have to be a small tournament.
Someday, yes. We actually will have a Mac news item that doesn't end up with Mac bashing in it. Someday.
Yeah.
Yes, that's when all the hosts other than us.
Yeah, when Mackie hosts it. It's Mackie and three Mac fans. What?
Hey, you can be Mackie and the Macs. Ooh. And start a band and go on tour.
Okay, maybe we should move on.
God News, email news at apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Illuminatus, Snoopy369, or Grand Patrol via Apolton's forums at apolton.net/forums.
Yes. Modcast time.
Modcast time!
Yay.
Welcome to the Modcast, where we talk about hot issues in the forums.
Favorite religion civic. I feel a deja vu over this topic. I don't know why.
This will indeed be related in our lead Senate topic, where we talk about state religion or no. They're tied together, and I thought about combining the two, and I thought, no, I think I can separate them well enough.
Well, the early on organized religion is pretty good, too, because you can get your buildings done faster. Don't worry about having to build the monasteries to spread your religion.
Mm. Well, my take is that the religion civics are the most balanced of them all, and so I really have no favourite. We've had to go for one, it'd be organised religion, because of the boost to buildings and the ability to build missionaries.
So you would switch to organised religion as soon as possible and stick with it?
Usually for the longest.
Yeah, I usually have organised religion almost to the point where I get free religion, you know, unless I happen to be trying for cultural and I want to do pacifism.
Ah, now you see, pacifism is the one that I would never even touch with a 10-foot pole.
Support cost per unit, sacre bleu.
Well, yes, I mean, there's no upkeep, but yeah, the one plus support cost per unit and plus 100% great person birth rate in cities with state religion. See, as I'm going to get to when we talk about state religion or no, I'm going to advocate for not adopting a state religion.
Uh-oh.
That's because you're a noob.
I'm sorry, we seem to have lost it. Oh.
He's right about them being balanced, because you can find a use for practically every one of these at some point.
And the other thing is they're all available early in the game, except for pre-religion, if you like want to. With a light bulb from a great person, for example, to get pacifism really early. And that makes them more useful.
Yeah, and like when I think we were discussing economy last time, we were like, do we use anything other than the free market?
Oh, come on. Dan uses decentralization all the way through.
I'm a communist state property.
Yeah, that has some use when you have a really big empire and where you have or you're about to conquer everything.
Then why wouldn't you have those? Conquer everyone, yes.
Well, I will echo what Imran said at the start, that I will go towards freedom of religion as soon as possible. If and when the United Nations is built, I don't know about you, but I have found that freedom of religion passes most often the first time, and if not, almost always the second time, which seems kind of odd, somewhat, because even nations with state-adopted religions that are, you know, the religions are quite widespread, or even those states that have founded religions, they seem to vote very easily for freedom of religion as soon as they can, and I don't know, that just kind of strikes me as a bit unusual.
AI isn't very good for it.
Oh, insulting the AI, huh?
Mm. I'm allowed to do that because I fix it. I haven't actually touched the UN behavior because I really get that far into the game. Well, at least by the time UN usually everything's conquered.
The fact that the AI follows Dan loyally, something wrong with that. If it was real AI, it'd be like, who the hell are you? We're going to start our own war.
Well, it's a mystery because I certainly didn't mod the AI.
No.
That would just be tragic if I tried to do that.
Yes, it would.
Look, I've created Pong.
What was the level below Settler again?
Pre-Settler. Larva.
Imran and I are freedom of religion people. Blake goes to organized religion and stays there.
All game long sometimes.
Ooh.
He's been around us too long already.
I start and organize, and then I usually go to free. But sometimes I have use for the other ones too.
Depending.
Blasphemy.
Depending.
Oh no.
It's one of those things. Depends on what your goal is in the game and what you're trying to do.
You're trying to win.
Strategy, Dan. Strategy.
Strategy.
Strategy?
No. Yeah, that just translates it to blah.
He just hears wah, 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 wah. Well, okay, let's do the Too Much Desert and Civ thing.
It's called a topic, actually, but it's okay. Use your words.
Thing.
Bob Doohickey.
Ooh, Doohickey. I like that one.
I also mean to talk about it.
Well, Cerudar said, is there too much desert in the Civ Cedars? Is there really that much desert in the world?
Yes, and he refers to real life. Don't cry, Mackie. Is there really that much desert in the world? It doesn't seem proportional.
No.
We assume he's talking about Civ 4 specifically, right? Since this is in Civ 4 general.
I guess so.
Has he looked at a map?
Our own Blake said 25% of the planet is covered in desert and 40% is arid. I took his.
So now I don't have to say anything on the topic.
Exactly. So basically, it's like, because you don't live near a desert, you don't realize it's there, basically. I mean, the Sahara is pretty damn big.
Yeah.
It's half of Africa, practically, and that's just one desert.
Yes.
And then there's, like, Australia.
But he could have had it, yeah, in Australia.
Well, Willem says...
mostly desert, too.
By default, 32% of the map is desert, so he reduces this to 25%, and he says they come out much better. I'm not sure how much that 70% really has all that much of a difference, but apparently maybe that might help some of you who are thinking there's too much desert.
Well, you know, he could have had a run of games like I've had recently where it seems that all the desert in the game gravitates towards...
Oh, yes. I am familiar.
Gravitates towards you? Now who thinks they're the center of the universe? Wow.
Awesome.
Because it is like, isn't it, so useful for much, but I think it's useful because it's not useful for much. It creates an area not to fight over. And the other thing is it creates floodplains, which is quite useful.
Well, floodplains are nice.
Yeah, I like it when it creates floodplains.
It's just everything else.
The problem is, I started a game just last night, and it was a random game with the fractal, and I got the Vikings, and I'm stuck on this little... well, it's not a little peninsula, but there's like this small section of arid land, and then there's this huge desert between me and England who has like this huge area to expand into. And I'm like, oh, I see how this game is going already. You know, so I can see if somebody could have games like that, they might think that, dang, desert, go away.
That's true. It might be just a run of bad luck.
It could be. And I guess ZC suggests large concentrated deserts would be nice to act as natural borders where... a city on the other side of the desert would be substantially far from your capital, and therefore civs would not tend to cross deserts, except along rivers, of course.
Hmm.
I assume we're referring to the AI, because we know the AI has issues. It's still working through them. What's one day at a time, you know? One bite at a time. Oh.
So you're referring to AI city spam in crappy places.
Yeah, thanks for fixing that.
You're welcome.
I have to raise less cities now.
There's a desert with no resources and just desert all around. Let's put a city down here.
But you know, I don't think there's too much desert in Civ. It seems right. Seems about right, but I would like to see it distributed, perhaps a little less randomly, as would Brutus 66, again, where you actually have large concentrated spots of deserts to act as natural borders, as opposed to, oh, there's a desert tile, and everything else is really nice. Ah, crap. Let's move over here. No. Now there's two. Where's the strategy?
Or a whole island that was all desert.
Ooh,
I think the desert is fine here as it is. I think it's about right the balance between... because if you had a huge desert in the game, you'd be pretty annoyed by that, wouldn't you? If it was like a massive desert right next to you.
Yeah, like when I play Egypt on the Earth map and I go, what am I supposed to do with all this?
Like, what the hell? You know, maybe they have more desert in the game because to initiate more oil. I don't know.
But I think part of a desert percentage is for floodplains because the well, it's 32% desert, but some of that turns to floodplain, which really isn't desert. It's the best tile in the game, so.
Yes, I do love the floodplains. Except I keep getting stuck in with the non-floodplainy desert. I keep getting stuck with New Mexico and Arizona and Nevada.
Yeah, at least with the desert, if we could have a few floodplains here and there. I mean, sure, we're going to have this problem with disease for a while, but that's okay.
I would hate a disease in Civ 3.
But I think for Syrdgar, as Erdargo suggests, you could try to mod the game. But again, if you're like me, that's probably not a good idea. So give your temperature adjuster some attention. And I believe somebody named Blake had a suggestion of tropical. I'm not sure who that is, but that sounds good.
What's going on, alter egos?
And then I guess there was kind of a related discussion just talking about, is there too much of any type of terrain, especially undesirable terrain, where Joseph talks about too much ice and would say that reducing the latitude at which tundra and ice appear would be nice. As SJM notes, you know, there's a more appropriate modification to improve gameplay than... as Imran noted, taking, for example, desert down from 32 to 25.
Yes, I did.
Some people think there's too much jungle. But I have to point out, that turns into grasslands, and that means money.
Owee-moe, owee-moe,
owee-moe. Oops.
Can the jungle the lion eats your settlers tonight?
These are the papers.
Oh, I hate it when they eat my settlers.
Try escorting them. These are fog busters.
Yeah, they're escorting them to lunch.
I can bring Nisko to get eaten by a bee.
Shall we move on, I guess, to the Senate?
Not the real Senate, but our Senate. Oh, right, that's politics. Oh. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Oh.
Welcome to the Senate. In this section, we talk about game strategy.
State religion or no? Dan, you said that you would rather not prefer state religion earlier in this podcast. Explain why. I look forward to hearing this interplay between Dan and Blake, seeing what Blake has said on this topic. But go ahead, Dan. Set up your foundation for getting ripped apart. Go.
In continuation from our lead modcast item on favorite religion, Civic, and Civilization 4, Hapless Horde asks if one should declare a state religion early in the game. Until I started playing on Warlord level. Yes, I do play on Warlord level now. Stop.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Okay, but... Well, before I started playing on Warlord level, religion was one of the two civics that I did not want to progress to that fifth and final level, so to speak, the other being, and still being, environmentalism under economy, as we discussed in episode 8. Before, I wanted to found a religion as quickly as possible, adopt it as my state religion, and work towards theocracy as fast as possible. After that, to prevent the spread of non-state religions in my cities, and I mean, of course, that plus two unit experience points. But once I got to the Warlord level, I think one needs to be concentrating more on your military, science, and economy in the very early game, thereby minimizing both the opportunity and desire to found and then adopt a state religion. Now, I will say, if you have immediate neighbors that make themselves known, particularly those known to be aggressive, f*** you, Montezuma, I recommend founding but not adopting a religion as a state religion. And if you do not have immediate neighbors, then don't even concern yourself with founding a religion at all. Because as you encounter neighbors, or they encounter you as the case may be, let whatever religion there be spread among your cities, so avoid theocracy, and as they spread, build temples to help appease the masses. But don't waste your time on monasteries, which, as many of us know, become obsolete sooner rather than later anyway.
Damn, I should have taken notes.
That was a long little speech.
I don't think he had it.
So now you're just hoping I could forget all the stupid things you said. But no, it's not that bad. The state religion depends a lot on difficulty level. At lower difficulties, it's a lot easier to get by without one. And it's also a lot easier to found more religions yourself. Any level above monarch, you really need to have a state religion so you can manipulate the diplomatic situation and get friends on your side, instead of, like, being a victim of a dog pile.
Especially if one of your neighbors is a developer.
Yeah, so...
So, basically, Dan is playing on a way too low difficulty level, which skews everything.
He's like, friends? I don't need friends.
It really does, though. I mean, that's actually kind of interesting how, you know, you go up in difficulty levels and the game just entirely changes.
It does.
In every way.
Well, isn't that kind of the idea?
Well, I mean...
A little bit?
A little bit, but not necessarily as much as it does in Civ, you know. The strategies that you use in the lower levels, well, a lot of ways won't be useful higher up.
And it's not necessarily because they are bad strategies, it's just because some things aren't possible against AI at higher levels.
Yeah, especially once they start getting bonuses towards their building and everything else, and it's a lot more difficult to counter it. I tend to wait later and go for Confucianism because I'm usually worried or trying to maybe conquer a neighbor at the beginning. I mean, not all the time.
Violent.
Because sometimes I want to do a cultural game and when, yeah, I know. But if you're trying to do a cultural game, then you do want to found a religion and adopt it early on so you can get it spread and spread it further, you know, and you get all the money coming into the shrine. It's actually almost an economic strategy in that respect.
It's using the oracle to pick up Code of Laws is useful because you also get profit points to later build a shrine.
Yeah, and Code of Laws brings courthouses, which is, again, economy.
It all goes back to economy.
Money makes the Civ world go round. Oh, wait, it works.
Exactly.
Hey, now. No reason to go there. I guess maybe perhaps it's just a symptom of my being on Warlord. But I've just been finding that relations with my neighbors are not as touchy-feely friendly as they used to be when I adopted state religions, but I find that they're more likely to be peaceful, and at worst cautious throughout the game, helping to ensure that if and when I want to go to war, they were more likely to be on my own turns, except for, you know, a few choice characters, like a certain one beginning with M.
And Inji Kazuma.
Mary, Queen of Scots? I don't know if she was in the game.
Although, I do have to say, I do miss the touchy-feely friendly with Isabella. Oh,
you like it when she slaps you around, don't you?
No, that's Cap.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Isabella just pouts.
That's right. Oh, you love the pouting, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I always give the gold and stuff to make her not stop pouting.
I give her a smack upside the head with a stack of units. Aren't you no horses, no iron?
No horses, no iron. No horses, no... Oh, is it different? Okay, so Uncle Woody, the settler who posted this topic, said he had a game going, but he has no access to iron or horses. He asked, does it pretty much mean he should just scrap it and restart?
Yeah, he is pretty hard up to know if he should do this.
Yeah, he notes further down in the thread that he's also without ivory, so he gets to do the huge stack of cash.
What is he, in the middle of a desert?
Oh, Italian.
Probably.
There's a question that Sir Ralph asks first, and SJM asks a little later. We still don't know if Uncle Woody has copper under his control.
No, that's true. He didn't post back so, anything, did he?
Ah, yes. Yeah, there was a suggestion of an axapult stack.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you've got copper access and you can get yourself axe bent, then find a reasonably accessible civilization that has iron and maybe some weak to moderate defenses.
And go for it.
So you can either march by road or transport by ship and take control of that iron resource yourself.
Yeah, but he didn't respond to that yet. So who knows if he does have
That's
iron.
True. Maybe he doesn't have copper and he just doesn't want to admit it. So why don't we just assume that no, he doesn't, because that makes this more interesting.
Yeah, he was, you know, he was like, I just had one city. I didn't know I could build more.
What was that? Dan's posting about his first experience.
Uncle Woody is his DL. That makes so much sense.
I'm not that clever.
So, yeah, if they don't have copper, then,
I don't know. If he doesn't have copper, I guess as long as Uncle Woody and his neighbors have some reasonable breathing and expansion room, why don't you build Longbowman now as Autroprox Socks? Whoa, that sounds like that stinks. Socks, wow.
Hate mail to Dan.
Uh-huh. So build Longbowman now, and then work towards chemistry and steel. Get yourself Grenadiers, and then use the catapult to knock city defense and soften defenders. Ah, catapults. The earlier game's equivalent to fighters and bombers for knocking down city defenses and softening defenders. Now available in Civilization 4.
I think the most important thing, if you don't have copper or iron, is whether or not your neighbors in that case is like the guy starting with Ian, who isn't Mansa Musa or Alexander. Like, one game is one of the Indians. I had neighbors of Monty, Alexander, Ragnar, and Tokugawa. I had no copper, iron, or horses. And as India. And the fast workers didn't help that much.
Monty, huh? So you're on someone's on a first name basis with that guy? Yeah. I don't like him anymore.
What's his last name, Dan?
Let's see. Rhymes with
Uma. You don't like Moctezuma?
Playtibus Rex suggests adopting the religion of whoever has the iron, see if that helps trading for it. Well, why don't you shop around first to see if more than one civ has iron, and see if you have resources that you can trade in exchange, because I know some people might say that's risky, but...
It's true, because if he doesn't have copper, iron, what exactly does he have?
Or ivory.
And what's he going to trade? What's he going to use to trade for it? The best idea would be to trade for horses.
Although I think it's fair to say, Uncle Woody, if you take your axemen and you start going to some neighbors and they have knights, mostly, then maybe you could abandon your game. Okay, that might be all right.
Maybe you want to start over.
Yeah. Or if you had the neighbors like Blake had in that game, maybe you want to start over.
Yeah, there's no sin in starting over. It's just a game.
Oh, tie-in.
What?
Tie in, religion, tie in, sin.
Oh, well. Okay. But, you know, it's a game. You know, you could start over. No one's looking at you and clucking at you and saying, shame on you. So, you know, if you want to restart because you don't feel you're doing so well, go ahead. Who cares?
Yeah, because all of us have done it sometime or the other, got in the game and realized you had no horses or irons, and then went, restart!
I have no horses or iron, and they have tanks. Uh-oh.
Research lab. Also known as the Lab of Research.
I feel like a scientist.
Welcome to the Research Lab, where we explore game concepts or ideas that are not in Civilization yet, but they might be in the future.
So you do bridge building? Because I have some interesting observation with bridge building right here.
That would be a first. Please do go ahead.
The topic starter, once again, is Uncle Woody! Dan? That's incredible. Is this the first time someone has had two threads make it on Polycast?
No. No, but...
Is this the first time a settler has had two threads?
Well, that could be.
Settler registered May 2006. Interesting.
Was that the interesting thing you had to
say?
Yes. Well,
oh,
what a letdown.
How do you build a bridge?
No, they're automatically built for you. Like in the past couple of seasons.
Yeah, and you can even see the little bridge icon or whatever it is. You know, if you look, you can see like a little bridge.
Yes, you may need to zoom in, but it's there.
So,
Uncle Woody wants. He would like to see be able to lay a bridge. I think he's getting to a single coastal tile because he's got two land masses that are apparently separated by a single coastal tile.
Oh, he wants to build something big like a Golden Gate or something?
Yes, and he wants to be able to move workers across because on the other side he has some pigs.
Yeah, back to the pig riders.
I see. So he wants something new.
But as is pointed out later in the thread, that's something along the lines of the channel. And that's not a small construction project, and it would probably have to be modern technology.
And you could just get like a little ship and use that as a bridge. I mean, really, for your worker.
Yeah, I've had to do that on island maps when you have cities, the little tiny islands, because you'll have a city that's on one island, and then the other land tiles are other little island. So you have like a dedicated ship that moves your workers.
It's like a ship bridge.
Yeah, but a moving ship.
Of course, yeah.
It doesn't stay there.
Yeah, I mean, you can use a ship, but of course, once you move a unit into a ship, it's lost for that turn, and you have to wait till the next turn. So wouldn't it be nice if there was some kind of medium? Because I agree when we're talking about building across an ocean tile, perhaps that's a later game technology, but there was a good suggestion in the thread about what to do.
What about a ferry improvement?
Well, here's the thing.
Yes, a ferry boat. Exactly.
I mean, yes, you would lose your unit for that turn if you put it in, but how long would it cost to create a ferry or bridge, wouldn't that be more than one turn? So just suck it up.
True, but you could go back and forth whenever you needed.
Hey, now, yes, that's true. You would have to take time building the ferry boat, but then once it's in place for the game. So strategy planning for the long term, short term pain for long term gain.
Yeah, imagine that ferry landing happened to be between England on the Earth map and Europe. It would more than pay for itself, even if it took like 10 or 12 turns to build it.
You know, I like though what Provisori said in the thread. Just build an aqueduct in a nearby city. It'll basically make a bridge for itself.
I think this topic has come up in every Civ game, basically, except like Quarterpair 2, which actually had an underwater channel thing. And generally it's just that we'll just use a boat. And also the interface would be a bit tricky, maybe. Because in Quarterpair, it was done by Public Works, and you just click on the map to place the bridge. A worker wouldn't be able to build a bridge because you can't go in the water.
Perhaps the ferry, though, would be a good idea.
Like, leaving a galley there? You're leaving a galley to act as a ferry? What's the difference?
No, I said you can use the tech and add, like, a ferry component improvement to it or something.
To sailing, maybe?
And what's the difference between that and a galley?
He means... Maybe with construction. I don't know. We were talking if there was actually a ferry improvement, what tech would you add it to?
Yeah, so the thing is, having a galley instead of the ferry boat, again, the idea being that once you move the unit into the galley, you've lost that unit until the next turn, whereas if you had Ferry Boat in place, then it would just be able to move across it like it would Road, for example.
Yes, because it could also free up your galleys for exploring or being unit transports for an army, which is another great reason to have a ferry.
So, yeah. So, ferry boating, it would just be like instead of building fishing boats, for example, you can now build ferries as well. But that is a good question. What technology would enable workboats to implement this service? I don't know. I mean, like on the current technology tree, maybe it's a little too late, too soon. I don't know. I mean, there's engineering right after construction, and engineering enables plus one road movement, so why not enable the pot?
I was thinking construction for some reason. Sailing seems far too early.
Does anybody remember in the original Civ when you were able to build roads and railroads across any length of ocean, even though it did absolutely nothing?
How did you do that?
Yep, you just put some workers on the boat.
Oh, that's right.
That was fun.
And pointless.
Look, I have an underwater railroad between New York and London. Not that I can use it, but I've got it.
You can't use it.
Yeah, something about steam power not working underwater. Or electricity.
Those who want to listen to Polycast but don't want to download it, you can now stream. Go on over.
Ooh, shiny.
Ooh, indeed. Head on over to polycast.apolton.net, the official Polycast website, and last time I checked, the only one, but... Head on over to the Polycast website and click on the stream option. Now available for all episodes released to date, it's retroactive.
Retroactive.
As opposed to radioactive, which would be a problem.
Are we supposed to get a new column anytime soon? I just looked at it, I'm like, somewhere in Johnson. When was this from? November 1st, 2006.
Someone writes one and submits one, they will be confirmed.
All right. The Reign of Terror of Dan Q by Imran Steve. Yes!
You just get right on that, then. As a matter of fact, if you like, we can let you go now and you can get started. We won't mind.
Are we going to the time machine?
Yes.
Ooh.
Time machine. In the time machine, we look back at key moments in Civ history.
Shall we discuss Sid Meier killing dinosaurs? I remember that. Well, remember Sid Meier dinosaurs? He had that, I guess it was after Civ 3, he was discussing it, if I recall correctly. He was discussing dinosaurs, and it sounded kind of like a somewhat of a more intense mod, I guess, of Civ 3, but with dinosaurs. You know, kind of like a dinosaur Civish game, but I mean, we didn't get much feedback on what it exactly was. I mean, that's just what we thought, and I think they did release a few models of the dinosaurs to be used in the game, but it was always in the background, and it was always kind of mysterious, and then suddenly Sid said, well, I'm not doing it anymore.
Yeah, its development was started before Civilization III, and Electronic Arts was going to publish dinosaurs, as a matter of fact, and this was the last time that there was ever any mention of Firaxis and EA working together.
Oh, maybe that was a fallout with EA.
Mm. It's a possibility.
I mean, because right after that, I guess he went on to Sim Golf, though.
Well, and actually, Dinosaurs says it was going to be released before Civilization 3, and the idea is that Dinosaurs and Civ 3 would be developed simultaneously. Mm. Apolton was one of the few dinosaur fan sites that sprung up during the game's development after its public announcement. As a matter of fact, on the same day that it was announced, we launched our dinosaur section. And to the best of my knowledge, it is still the only dinosaur site still available at apolton.net/dino.
I'm not sure if you should be proud of that.
Yeah.
We have more obsolete stuff on our site than anyone else.
And we have a Polycast.
Oh. It was on December 13th, 1999, that Firaxis Games' website showed us the first part of the eye of the dinosaur that was previously covered by an egg. And 4 days later, it was confirmed a game on dinosaurs. Dinos had been in development since April of 1999, so more than 6 months. And as part of the public reporting process on Dino's development, some people will remember the various diaries. We started seeing developer diaries from Firaxis. However, the diaries kind of gave an indication, certainly in hindsight, of how development was slowing down and perhaps hitting some stumbling blocks. We had the fourth one in January 2000, fifth one the next month, the sixth the next, the seventh in April, but then the eighth would not come until July.
Mm.
And then We had an even longer dry spell, followed by official word on January 24th, 2001, when Sid announced the cancellation or, as a Bolton phrased it, the extinction of dinosaurs.
Again. Very clever.
We thought so. And Sid talked about that they had three different approaches for the game. One was it was going to be turn-based. There was a turn-based model. There was a real-time model. And there was even a first-person perspective where you were the dinosaur.
Yeah, that sounds kind of weird, that last one. I mean, if there's a turn-based, a real-time, and you're the dinosaur model, I mean,
Sid said, quote, "So far, we haven't found that magic combination of ingredients that really makes it fun. And if it ain't fun, it don't get done," unquote.
When you were at, what was it? When you went down to Maryland to meet them.
A Polycon.
That's it.
06.
Did you ask anything about dinosaurs?
No, as a matter of
you
fact.
You missed your chance.
Anybody else?
Well, I mean, because I'm sure in the video game and computer game business, there are a lot of these ideas that get built up a little bit, and then the producers of the ideas or developers of the ideas say, well, this has really ended up sounding stupid, so we're not going to do it. It'd be interesting to, I guess, see exactly, like, you know, the thought process of it. I mean, no one really knew that much about dinosaurs in the first place.
I think it got a little bit of attention at the 2002 Design, Innovate, Create, and Entertain Summit, or DICE, where Sid delivered a speech to attendees entitled The Dino Project, Three Glorious Failures, referring to the three failed prototypes, the RTS, the TBS, and the first-person environment one, where he said, quote, "Sometimes we learn more from a game that doesn't quite work than from one that does," unquote. And the last word we heard on dinosaurs was that it was still on the back burner. That was more than 3 years after DICE. It's in August 2005. Anybody remember the Ask Sid feature on Fraxis's website, which I think still exists. It's updated infrequently.
Yeah.
Where he replied that, "Haven't had much time to go back and look at this game closely, but that he still loves the idea and would like to revisit it when he has some time."
Leaving the door open for future dinos.
That's right. So, Sid, if you're thinking about console development and dinosaurs on the PC, I think you know which one you have to choose.
Console development?
Well, I can face that I've never actually heard of dinosaurs, because I think that was slightly before I came to Apolliton. I'm not sure, though. But first I've heard of the dinosaurs is in the topic Dan sent me. Polycast.
I do think, though, also, well, one thing I was saying about dinosaurs is a lot of people, when the dinosaurs, I guess Dan said that it came out before Civ 3, and a lot of people said, "Why are you working on dinosaurs? Work on Civ 3.
It happens all the time with projects. Companies have more than one idea floating around. They sometimes don't have all the people they need to work on it, especially with a smaller company like Firaxis.
Yes, and Sis said that this wasn't the first time that they had a project on their plate and they set it aside, and they would eventually come back to it. For example, he tried what became Gettysburg before Gettysburg came around, set it aside, came back to it. We got that, and even then the original Civilization was months in development and then put on hold and then came back to it. So anyone who's looking forward to dinosaurs and thinks that Sid is just saying what some people want to hear when he says, "Oh yes, we'll get back to it when he has time," I think he will get back to it. He has a good track record. Has anyone ever called in for real and we had to tell them no?
No, never. Nobody likes us.
Help break this cycle. Call in today. In North America, 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-20-7871-7659. That's 44-20-7871-POLY. Or Skype us directly through using Skype from Skype.com. Direct your calls to the Polycast. For more information on the show, including how to write in, where to find the official Polycast forum, and how to subscribe to the RSS feed, log on to the official Polycast website at polycast.apolton.net. Imran, can you type more quietly? Like, seriously.
That's what my freaking keyboard makes, damn it.
When we look up, the fields are white.
Polycast got its first call, only it turned out to be a wrong number.
Message sent today at 10:53 p.m.
Hello, is this Martin? This is Clayton. Do you have a mobile number for Cedric? Cheers.
However, I took it upon myself to call this individual back and let them know what they were missing out on.
Oh, dear.
Uh-huh. Internet site. You guys are nerds.
He's like, how do I get rid of this guy? Why is he talking to me?
The people are the heroes. Now.
Welcome to the O2 messaging service. The person you are calling is unable to take your call. Please leave your message after the tone. To re-record your message, key hash at any time.
The people are the heroes now.
Hello?
Yes, good evening. Is this Clayton?
Who's this?
I've got your number here. I think you phoned yesterday. Were you looking for a mobile number for Cedric?
Oh, yeah. I am, yeah.
Oh, hi. I think you phoned 4420-7871-7659. And you left a message, and I'm sorry, but no, this isn't Martin. So I just wanted to call back and say, no, sorry, you had the wrong number, so you won't get a response to your specific question.
You know, Cedric.
No, I'm sorry. I don't suppose you've ever played the computer game Civilization or any of its sequels, have you?
Why?
Well, you see, you left a message on the voicemail for an official podcast called Polycast, the official podcast of a Polton Civilization site. We're dedicated to the continuing coverage of Civ and its related computer games. So I thought perhaps that you had left a message for us. Perhaps you were a Civ fan, because you see, we've never had anybody call into the show. So when there was a voicemail message, my name is Dan, by the way, I'm one of the co-hosts, and there was a message, and I thought, oh, someone finally called in to our show, and then it looked like the wrong number. I thought perhaps maybe you were a Civ fan, just by coincidence.
No, I must just have a wrong number, mate. Sorry. Where are you from? Where are you based?
Oh, no, that's all right. I'm in Canada, actually.
I'm sorry, mate. I've got that number then.
Oh, no, see, that's quite all right. See, we have, for the show, we have a number based in North America, and we also have a European-based number that's in London. You see, 7659, the last four digits, spells poly, like polycast. So
right.
I guess it was just one of those coincidence things, and I said I thought perhaps maybe you were a Civ fan, because then I could say, hey, you could tune into the show, but I guess not.
What show do you do?
It's called Polycast. It's on
on the internet, is it?
Yes, it's on the internet. It's at polycast.apolliton.net.
Oh, right, yeah. Sorry, it's just a really bizarre mistake, actually.
Oh, no, that's not a problem at all. I just wanted to call you back and say, you know, that person hasn't called me back yet. I wonder what's going on, so.
I just must have just had a wrong number then.
Oh,
sorry about that, Michael.
Oh, there's no reason to apologize, and I hope you get a hold of the real Martin and get your mobile number for Cedric, and perhaps you'll check out Polycast at some point.
Okay, mate. All right, thank you.
So what'd you think, Blake? Is that funny or just pathetic or somewhere in between?
Pathetic.
Oh.
It's just pathetic. Sorry, but that's true. But it's funny in a pathetic way. Pathetic in a funny way.
Well, that's okay then. I'll take it. Yeah. He could have just hung up.
Damn. He had nothing better to do. You called? Dan just calls random people.
It could be like a random polycast prank call.
He's prank calling people.
Yeah, it's like we got our first polycast call. Hey, you called me. I'm just calling back. What is this polycast thing? It's like, oh no, they called with the wrong number. Thank you for calling. Someone actually listens to me. You could be a hero, Dan. Just go with it. We can introduce next podcast. Dan Q, the hero.
Did you ever know that you're my...
Okay, maybe not.
No.
On the other hand...
Don't encourage him.
I know how we can crush his spirit. Hey, Dan, want to play a multiplayer game against Blake?
Get him to tape it. We can put it up as a multi-part thing on.
And then, oh yeah, and we can also have like little webcams and show Dan's face getting sad.
I've got a webcam so I can show my face getting happy.
My face getting sad. Why don't you just take a picture of me now?
Oh. If you're looking for sympathy, well, you got it. Have you reached the end?
The bitter
this
end.
This is the end.
So, ending. Blake,
what?
Rock and roll.
So now I'll be to say that.
Or country, or R&B, or whatever you like.
What?
Huh? See, I said rock and roll, and then I thought, well, maybe that wasn't your type of music, so I was suggesting some others.
Dan, just be quiet.
Thank you for listening to Polycast. I had to get up at 5 a.m. on Sunday morning, and Dan best not cut out a bit or I call him a noob.
It's because he is a noob.
That was Blake. I'm Dan.
Are you?
I think so.
I thought you and Imran were the same.
Oh, yes, and I may or may not be Imran Siddiqui.
And then possibly Maki, but, you know.
I guess we thank Blake for being with us.
You're welcome.
You brought actual strategy and, I guess, Civ knowledge to our podcast.
Knowledge. Yes. And after you're welcome, Blake wanted to say, it's been your pleasure, but...
Well, he did have to get up in the morning.
Have a fun day, and Dan, don't try to hurt anyone.
Too late.
He's hurt us all.
But you keep coming back.
I liked it.
He's a freak like that.
Don't you wish your podcast co-hosts were freaks like me?
Wait, you are.
Oh, yes, oh. Revelation!
Record date February 17, 2007. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization 4 and the Warlords Expansion Pack. Copyright 2007, Appleton Civilization site at appleton.net.